You're listening to a podcast from the Today programme on BBC Radio 4.
The prospects for the global economy seem bright. Rob Young can tell us more and bring us the rest of the business news. Morning, Rob.
Yes, good morning. The global economy is in much better shape than economists and policymakers were forecasting just a few months ago. The Bank of England has dramatically increased its prediction for UK growth to 2%. That's more than twice the rate it was expecting back in August. And in the US, businesses seem to be creating more jobs than expected. And China's manufacturers have just had their best month for 2 years. Well, let's chew all of this over with three people in the know. Kuli Samra, Managing Director of Charles Schwab UK, Kathleen Brooks, Research Director at Citi Index, and Lucy O'Carroll, Chief Economist at Aberdeen Asset Management. Morning to you all.
Good morning.
Lucy, the UK, first of all. The Bank of England seems to have gone from being almost doom-monger-in-chief to something like a sunny optimist. Is it right to massively increase its growth forecasts? And given they keep being upgraded, can we believe them?
Well, their forecasting record recently perhaps hasn't been the most stellar, but it was very interesting to see what they announced yesterday on two counts. One, there were the big upgrades to the growth forecast that you've just referred to. And then on the other side, they also changed a very important fundamental assumption about the amount of slack in the economy and said that they think the unemployment rate can fall further without triggering inflationary pressures. So there was a reappraisal of the trade-off between growth and inflation in a way that was much more optimistic. Whether that will come true is another issue.
Right. Now, Kathleen, consumer spending, supported by pretty rapid growth in borrowing, is what has kept the economy going over the past couple of years. Now, the Bank of England says that wages won't rise all that much over coming years. So is the consumer binge sustainable?
Well, I mean, in that sense, no. I mean, savings ratios are at their lowest level since records began. So one could say no. But I thought it was interesting that the Bank of England actually almost took credit for the consumer binge as well, because they were the ones who cut interest rates back in August. So that's helping to sustain both consumer consumption, but also business investment too. So there are definitely risks there. But the Bank of England managed to swerve being outright criticised, I think.
Now, Theresa May's decision to rule out single market membership ahead of Brexit negotiations has raised the possibility of financial services jobs shifting to rival EU financial centres like Amsterdam or Paris or Frankfurt. But Mr. Carney said that London, which is home to 40% of the world's global derivatives business, is best equipped to host those firms.
What we need to do as regulators, as authorities, is within whatever is agreed, is to try to smooth whatever transition needs to happen. But it shouldn't be underestimated how to do this. And if it is done conveniently with workarounds, then one's taking black box risk in the jurisdiction that accepts the workaround.
Cully, Governor Mark Carney says he sees twists and turns before Brexit. Mm. What are those twists and turns likely to look like?
We don't know, right? We don't know what Brexit is going to look like. We have the white paper out, which is hopefully going to give us some kind of idea. But I mean, just taking this job situation in the financial industry, which is what we're all in, I guess, from here, I would agree with Lloyd Blankfein that it's probably more likely that a lot of these jobs will probably move back to New York. So it's those kind of twists and turns, which we just don't know what will look like from our industry or other industries as well. And we've been told we will come out of the single market. Politicians have this incredible habit or this incredible ability, I guess, of finding some kind of muddle through. And let's face it, in a negotiation, start of a negotiation, you have to put down your flags at very extreme positions and hopefully come somewhere in the middle. So the twists and turns will probably look like us coming towards the middle, hopefully.
Well, it sounds like Mark Carney's hoping to put his feet up for a bit, because he said that central bankers' scope to direct the global economy is diminishing with interest rates already so low.
In many respects, we're coming to the last seconds of central bankers' 15 minutes of fame, if to use the, you know, the Warhol line, which is a good thing, because in this forecast, in my opening comments, I mentioned fiscal policy a couple of times. Also, structural policy is becoming more important. Trade policy, clearly important here and elsewhere. And that, just in general, is a much better balance than, to use the overused phrase, than the only game in town being central banks and monetary policy.
Lucy, have central bankers reached the limits of what they can do to pep up economies?
No, I think he's wishful thinking, to be perfectly honest. I mean, even when interest rates start to rise and we regain some sense of normalisation in countries like the UK, obviously it started to some extent in the United States, monetary policy is still going to be a very important part of the story. His wishful thinking and that of other central bankers is they've been pointing out for a number of years now, they've been taking a lot of flack for what is perceived to be excessively accommodative monetary policy, but that's because there's been so little done on the fiscal policy and structural side.
Now, in the United States, there have been pretty decent job creation data of late. We'll get the latest numbers on that later on today. Cully, do you think this is Barack Obama's legacy, or is it the Donald Trump effect?
I don't think any one president can take any credit or otherwise for what's going on with the economy. I think there are a lot more inputs. Of course, you know, policy does matter in the longer run, but I think in the shorter term, it's much more important about the underlying numbers and you know, what consumers are doing, what companies are doing, and you know, job creation is strong, earnings are growing very positively now. We had four consecutive quarters of earnings contraction, and that was broken in Q3. Q4 earnings look to be around about 7%. So I think the job status today will be very, very strong as well.
And Lucy, do you think that Donald Trump's pro-business policies like reducing regulation, cutting taxes, are undermined by somewhat chaotic policymaking in areas like immigration?
Well, we've seen a lot of positive sentiment in the post-election period, the run-up to the inauguration, driven by this idea of him as a sort of regulation-cutting, tax-cutting, fiscal-spending president. Since inauguration, it's been a little less clear exactly what's going to happen. And I guess there must be some element of learning on the job. It's just that the job happens to be one of the most important, if not the most important, in the global economy. So let's hope things settle down soon.
I think what also is very important is the people that he has around him. And there are some pugnacious characters in there. You know, the three main secretaries, I don't think will take anything lying down. I've already disagreed with them in public on a number of very big items.
Yeah,
Mnuchin, Tillerson and General Mattis as well. So I think that's going to be very important.
All right. Cully Samra, Kathleen Brooks, Lucy O'Carroll, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Now, we are government ministers. Tell us, in a golden era of relations between China and the UK, trade between us and the world's second biggest economy was worth £55 billion in 2015, but we buy considerably more from China than we sell there. But the growing ranks of China's middle class seem to have a growing fondness for brand Britain. When I was there recently, there were a lot of young people with the Union flag emblazoned on their T-shirts and sweaters. Jim James is the managing director of Morgan Cars in China. He also works as a kind of brand ambassador, helping other UK companies sell their products there. As we sat on his red, white and blue sofa in Beijing, he told me why UK products seem to be doing increasingly well.
I think British brands for the Chinese represent a number of things, one of which is our heritage, and that we have this respect for individuals and innovation and creativity, and yet we also have this amazing heritage. And if we look at events and programmes like Downton Abbey, for example, or even the affection for the monarchy in China, there is a real sense that our culture is a very established and very civilised culture, and the Chinese really enjoy and want to embrace that.
France, Spain, Italy also have long-standing, proud cultures. Why are they more keen on the British culture than the French or Italian or whatever?
They often think of English as gentlemen. And I'm amazed the number of meetings I go to say, oh, you're such an English gentleman. And there's a sort of sense that we have a particular sort of stereotype. I don't hear that when they talk about European, French or German. They might do it the French charm or the Italian food or the German efficiency. But those are not necessarily warm, resonant qualities that they want to associate with. And I think the other is our sense of humour. I think there is a sense that the British, no matter what happens, will always have a bit of a giggle and laugh and make some humour out of it.
So what types of British brands sell well in China?
Jaguar Land Rover certainly leads the way in terms of both percentage of our exports, but also in terms of awareness. It's doing fantastically well here. Also, brands like Burberry, of course, are doing well. And brands like our universities and secondary schools and boarding schools are doing very well in UK property. So it's not just the exports into China, it's some of the things that we've got at home in the UK that are very appealing to Chinese.
So we're talking here then largely about the well-heeled in China, not necessarily people who are what you might regard as middle class or working class, more ordinary Chinese people.
Well, I think that the brand UK is appealing to people regardless of where they are in the social strata, really. We're seeing people riding scooters and wearing backpacks with Union Jacks on them. And we're seeing well-heeled people driving Jaguars and Land Rovers. So I think brand UK is appealing to people across the social spectrum.
When somebody buys a British product in China, what is it that they hope the brand will bestow upon them?
I think we've got a couple of elements. We look at a product like Morgan Cars, for example. The belief is that it comes from the UK, it'll be well made. And that's not just the hand-making element of it, but the raw materials, the supply chain will be good. And also the after-sales care, the insurance and all the soft elements of a product will be good as well. So I think one of the key elements is the quality throughout the British product.
The value of the pound's fallen quite a bit in recent months. Does that make British goods more competitive? Does it give them even more of an edge in China?
The depreciation of the pound against the RMB is fantastic news for exporters. One or two exporters have increased their prices into China, which I think is a real mistake because all they've tried to do is to sort of shore themselves up instead of getting the volume uplift. But a weakened pound is super news for all of us in China that are trying to build the brand because we can take the extra margin and use it for marketing and greater distribution.
As someone who is trying to persuade Chinese people to buy more British products, have you had to change anything after the Brexit referendum?
It was interesting, the response in China. People said, we still love the UK, it's still the same place. And with Wake Drinks, which is a new energy drink from the UK that we just started to import, we changed the labelling from Wake Original to Proudly British. So I think that there's a sense that the UK is standing up for itself, that Brexit means that there's a group of people who are saying we want a voice, and that's something to be proud of.
There has been some commentary in Chinese state media that relations between China and the UK are not as warm as they were. Does that kind of talk have an impact on the perception of British brands among ordinary Chinese?
I think that the ordinary Chinese, by and large, are worried about economic and social development, not about political discourse. And so they see the Chinese government as taking on a certain mantle, but their association with British brands are not affected. They still have the same warmth and empathy about British brands that they've always had.
That was British businessman Jim James there in Beijing.
You can listen to more free content from the Today programme by going to www.bbc.co.uk/today.